Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Today is Thursday, March 6th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
You've just entered a dimension of dirty water, a dimension of poop-filled water, a dimension of stagnant water. You've crossed into the Dirty Waterer Zone. But up ahead is your signpost to cleaner water, the Brightap Chicken Waterer. The Brightap Waterer is fully covered. Chickens drink from special valves, so dirt and droppings can't get into the water. Chickens get sparkling clean water. You get less work. No poop-filled water pans for you to touch or wash out. Brightap, clean water made simple. Visit chickenwaterer.com to learn more. That's chickenwaterer.com.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Thursday, March 6th. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We do have poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. She's going to be joining us, and we've got a neat show every time we have this topic. It ends up being a pretty neat show. We learn a little bit about the newest studies that are out there regarding backyard poultry and poultry in general, and it's basically comes on, and I think it's called Poultry Research Translated. And so she'll take some of the most recent studies she's found regarding poultry that she thinks our listeners may be interested in, kind of translates those so we can understand them a little better. So the last couple of times, it's been a really neat show. So I'm looking forward to it. Get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out and get ready to take some notes. It might be something that pertains to you in your backyard today with our episode of Poultry Today with Dr. McRae. So I want to make the announcement I did on Facebook the other day. The Chicken Whisperer Magazine Spring 2014 edition magazine has gone to the printers. It is official. No turning back now, huh? So it has gone to the printers, and I don't have an exact date of when they will actually mail out to your mailbox, nor an exact date when you'll get the digital edition in your inbox. But it will be soon. I would suspect probably by around March 15th, you should have the print edition. I know they ship, as most magazines ship, third-class mail, so it may take a little longer than a regular letter or whatnot. But they should be coming your way very shortly, and including the digital edition. So I hope you do enjoy Chicken Whisperer Magazine. There's a lot of good articles in there from the top scientists and from around the country regarding backyard poultry, so I hope you'll enjoy your issue, whether you signed up for the very free digital edition or the very inexpensive $10 a year, actually $9.95 for the print edition. So, and there's a great review in there by Christmas Chick on an incubator, which is great. There's a cartoon in there from Redoodles. There's great topics and articles from Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, Dr. McRae, who we're talking with today, Dr. Patiski at UC Davis, Doctor, because she has two PhDs, Casey Barton Bear-Ravesh with the CDC. I've got an article in there about brooding. Jen Schneider has an article in there about hatching in the classroom, of course, at the educational level, so got to love that. And so we hope you enjoy the magazine. So we'll be heading off on our book tour a week from yesterday on the 12th. We'll be hooking up to the RV and heading out. We kind of have a home base right now in Atlanta. We've had several things to do to get ready. Yesterday picked up some new embroidered shirts, a new hat, things like that for this awesome book tour and speaking tour I'm doing with Tractor Supply over the next 5 weeks all across the country. And, yes, Christmas Chick will be glad to know, and all of my regular listeners, I did end up popping for a brand new laptop, you know, the one I forgot. Has been giving me some issues now for about a year, maybe longer, and I am glad to have purchased a new one. I went to a computer geek store, not a Best Buy, not a Fry's, what do they call it, a consumer computer, but more of a professional business rated computer. So I've heard about these people for many years in Atlanta. They've been in the same location for over 20 years. And I was explaining what I did and my history of buying computers, because I've always been kind of a guy that's just, you know, $450, $500, $399 type of computer, you know, Office Depot, Staples, Best Buy, whatever. And I just kind of said, you know, the last computer I bought 3 years ago was the top of the line at that time. And I'd say I'd spend a pretty penny on it because I could justify it. You know, I'm making a living doing this broadcasting. Now we've got the magazine. I'm writing more. I'm getting PDF files of the magazines, things like that. So I'm like, you know, so I explained to them what I was doing. All they do is computers. No TVs, no washing machines, none of that at the other stores. And they've been doing it for over 20 years, same location. And I've known about them for a long time. And so they kind of went through and we customized a computer. Again, at the professional level, not the home or consumer type entertainment computer, but one based strictly on business. And I told them, I said, one problem I have is that when you buy one at the big box store, it has all this crap on it, all this stuff that you never use, all this software that these, obviously, software companies either, you know, get a kickback or they say, hey, if you'll put this on your computer, Mr. HP, then we'll give it to you for free. You know how that works. So none of that junk on there, just the stuff that I need at the professional level. And I didn't want Windows 8, so, you know, Windows Professional, Windows 7 Professional. And we upgraded memory and drives and things like that. It's really cool. So they're actually putting it together, custom build, for me, and I should be ready after 12 o'clock today. So I'm really looking forward to that. And to get rid of this what I thought was a good computer. And again, I had all the bells and whistles on it, but a lot of those bells and whistles I never used. Or I was flooded with pop-ups with all the stuff that was downloaded from the factory when it went to, say, Best Buy. Just horrible. So slowed it down. It's just, you know, stuff that I'd never used, Blu-ray, all this stuff. So anyway, bottom line, very happy, I think. I hate spending money. But it was definitely needed. My wife was like, you have to do this. I don't know if it was a virus or a glitch I had when I was trying to type my articles and typing online. The cursor would go back to the beginning of the sentence, and I'd keep typing, and it would mess up the sentence. It was just horrible. So mainly because my wife says, you must get another computer. Now, of course, I've got one, so looking forward to that on the tour. And many of you in the chat room who know when I type in the chat room and words get discombobulated, you'll be happy as well. So I'm not using it yet. I'll be picking up today afternoon. So I'm happy for that. But yes, we have a great show today. Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist, is going to be joining us. And I don't think that is her, unless she's calling from a different place. I don't think that is your number, because it doesn't look like the number I'm familiar with. So if that's you in caller queue, there she is. She's calling in right now. Perfect. Now that's the number I recognize. We're going to go ahead and bring on our good friend, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae. Let's go ahead and give her a round of applause. Hey, Doc.
Hi,
thanks
Andy.
For joining us today.
That's kind of quick. I, like, just phoned in. I usually wait a little longer. You
yep,
are
no
on
worries.
Point today.
Yep, I didn't, you know, I just was just talking about some just current events, things like that, the tour and what's going on and prepping for that. And but, yeah, we're ready to get on with the show. And poultry studies translated and looking good. Every time you're on, we have this episode. It's pretty neat. People find it interesting.
Yeah.
You chewed some really neat information, some of the very recent.
I like sharing what's new out there, and, you know, it's hit or miss as to what people are actually going to find interesting, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's an opportunity for me to translate information to your listeners, and, you know, hopefully they'll find the latest and greatest stuff interesting. You know, I have about, four today to talk to you about. And you know, I sift through several before I select the ones that I bring to you. So the first one that I'm going to talk about is entitled Productive Performance, Eggshell Quality, and Eggshell Ultrastructure of Laying Hens Fed Diet Supplemented with Organic Trace Minerals. Now, this is a study that looks like it was a Brazilian study. So these folks, you know, submit articles from all over the planet. And, you know, they wanted to take a look at the effect of supplementing the hens' diets with trace minerals from organic or inorganic sources and see how it affects their ability to produce eggs, the eggshell quality, and the actual structure of the eggshell itself. You know, the results being if you give them a different type of mineral source and they don't lay as many eggs, well, you might not want to stick with that mineral source. if they lay lots of eggs and they're super thin and they're cracking all the time, that's not a marketable egg product. So you'll have to change back to what you were using before.
Now, you stated it was a Brazilian study. Is
yes.
that somewhere between a million and a trillion?
Nice.
A
I wasn't ready for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Lordy.
And then when you actually look at the actual ultra structure, the structure of the eggshell itself, and if you're a poultry science major, most of us have looked at an eggshell under the microscope, and you can see all the pores, and you can see where it attaches to the outer shell membrane and what it looks like. You know, you want to take a look at that and make sure that these minerals that you're using, that the bird has available to it to create that shell structure, is suitable for your needs, and they're actually using it appropriately for your marketable product. So they used 360 Highline W36 laying hens that were raised. You know, they started the study at 47 weeks, and they kept them until 62 weeks of age. And they randomly put them into pens, 9 treatments. Each treatment had 5 replicates because, like I said, anything can happen once. And each bird was in, 8 birds were in each pen. So what they did, and we've talked about this in the past, there's always a control diet. Something that doesn't contain the item that you are trying to test, your treatment. It is treatment-free. So the control diet didn't have any supplemented trace minerals of manganese, zinc, and... Oh, I just blanked on that one. Oh, bad me in the periodic table. See you. So they had 4 supplementation levels for the trace minerals from an inorganic source, and the same levels of supplementation from an organic source. Proteinate was their organic source. And when you're dealing with mixing diets for, you know, you're dealing with milligrams per kilogram, so... You know, these are students that have learned how to mix diets, and you figure out what ratios of magnesium, zinc, and CU you are trying to put in. And then as far as their results, there was no effect of supplementation of trace minerals on the rate of posture, feed intake, feed conversion, specific weight, and haul unit. And just to go through those things, feed intake is how much feed they eat. Feed conversion is how much of that feed is converted into eggs or body weight. The weight of the bird is the specific weight. And the haul unit has to do with the protein quality in the egg, specifically the egg white. And I know your listeners have cracked open an egg or two in their lifetime. When you crack an egg into a flat surface, you're going to see the yolk, if it's really fresh, stands up really high. And so will the egg white, and it stays very close around the egg yolk. That's a very fresh egg. It has a high-quality protein, and the haul unit is going to be very high. Now, if for some reason what you're feeding the bird causes, or the way you're handling the egg, causes the proteins to be of lower quality, that haul unit will be a lower number. Your egg albumin will be kind of flatter. It may even kind of drift away in the thinner layer from the egg white. And, you know, that's what we're looking at when we say we want to calculate the haul unit of eggs. So when people are saying, Andy, my eggs are better, one of the things they really need to think about is, well, what do you, and I challenge people who come to my sessions, what do you mean by better?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're referring to taste. Sometimes they're referring to yolk color. Sometimes they're referring to how it looks in the pan. And they're referring to the freshness of the egg.
Of course, all that's subjective to the person who's eating it or looking at it. Those things that they listed, right.
But there are scientific ways of measuring each of those things. For the feeling that an egg tastes better, we have what's called a sensory evaluation test. You set up 3 samples and give it to the person, and they have to determine which which two of the three are the same. So you give them, you're actually giving them, like, maybe you were comparing free-range eggs and organic eggs, and someone says they can taste the difference. Okay, then you do a triangle test. You give them two of one kind and one of the other, and they have to tell you which two are the same. And if you do that over and over and over and over and over and over and over again with lots and lots and lots and lots of people, you can determine if the population, the human population, is capable of determining if there is a taste difference between those two sets of eggs. That's a sensory evaluation. Now, the Hall unit is how we measure the albumin height. And the other thing that we talked about was the egg yolk color, and that's called a Roche color test, or a yolk color test. We use a Roche fan for that. So there are ways of measuring these things when people say their eggs are better. But, you know, I hope to educate your listeners so that they're more critical of how people word things and how they market their eggs. If their eggs are better, how are they better? Is it the yolk color? Is it the freshness? Is it the taste? There you go. So their results is that there just really wasn't much effect of the supplement. But they did have some effect on the average egg weight and egg mass. And they didn't really differ too much. It wasn't a huge difference. They looked at the breaking strength and the percentage of eggshell. So what they'll do is they'll put an egg in a machine that slowly lowers down until the egg actually cracks and breaks, and that's the breaking strength test. And the percentage of eggshell has to do with, and that's something that anybody in your listening audience could do, is you weigh the eggshell once it's dried for 24 hours. You've separated the contents from the shell. And you also separated out the egg yolk and weigh that. So you weigh the egg white, you weigh the egg yolk, and you weigh the the eggshell. And, of course, you weigh the egg whole before you do all this. And you determine what percentage of that total was the actual shell. You know, you want a nice strong shell, but you don't want too much shell because people don't eat the shell. They eat the contents. But you need the shell to be strong enough that it can survive transport and handling. Well, handling and then transport. So there was a decrease in the egg loss in the number of what's called mammillary buttons on the shell. The mammillary buttons are attached to the outer shell membrane, and that's the foundation upon which the shell is built. And so you get these columns of calcium carbonate that grow up along the mammillary buttons. What they found out in the results of this particular trial is that the best results were found using diets supplemented with trace minerals from the organic source, because the diets provided lower egg loss, higher shell thickness, increased strength of the shell. So for those out there, maybe as a science fair project, since this might still be science fair season, and you have a microscope at home, what you might be able to do, if your microscope has one of those lenses that has a little scale on it, is after your mom's done with the eggs in the morning from your flock, you might be able to compare your thickness of your shell, if you have a really strong microscope with a little scale inside there, you might be able to compare the thickness of your eggshells with that of the grocery store eggshells, if you can convince your mom to go buy grocery store eggshells for this purpose. So, you know, the trace minerals from the organic source, the supplements improve the structural characteristics and the quality of the eggshells. So that was a study that shows that there might perhaps lead to some changes in the diets and find a more organic source of trace minerals for your chicken diet. Moving on to the next topic. Here is one that, oh, and Andy, I don't have the chat room up today. So if there's any questions that come up, I'll ask you to stop me and ask
That's
me.
That's fine. Yep, no problem.
Okay. This one I found really interesting. It's the effects of a natural blend of essential oils on growth performance, blood chemistry.
That's always a hot topic. Essential oils.
Because you never want to hurt performance. You always want to improve growth and performance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, effects of a natural blend of essential oil on growth performance, blood chemistry, cecal morphology, and carcass quality of broiler chickens. This was a joint study between researchers in Scotland and Italy. And what they did is they took a proprietary commercial blend of essential oils that included basil, caraway, laurel, lemon, oregano, sage, tea, and thyme. So kind of a broad mix there. And it, the commercial name is the Technaroma Herbal Mix PL. So they looked at growth performance, again, because, you know, we don't like to have growth promoters in the form of subtherapeutic levels of antibiotics in the feed anymore, correct?
Yeah.
People don't like antibiotics in the feed, so they're looking for alternatives, and these essential oil blends tend to be the way people are looking. You look at blood chemistry because you don't want to cause the bird to be toxic. You don't want to see toxic levels of anything in the birds by giving them these different essential oils. You look at the cecal morphology. So you're actually looking under a microscope and looking at the height of the lining of the ceca in the birds to see how much they're digesting, and then, of course, carcass quality of the birds. So what they did is they basically looked at the literature, and they knew that essential oils inhibit a lot of things. They're antimicrobial in action. Some are antiviral. Some are antiparasitic. But then there's also the bonus activities that some of these essential oils can give you. Some of them have antioxidant activities. Some are antitoxigenic, so they're antitoxin activities. Some of them are digestive stimulants. So, you know, they have beneficial properties, a big range of beneficial properties. So they continued looking in the literature, and they found that there's a lot of writing out there about petri dish work, the more basic work, looking at the evidence of the antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral activities of these different plant extracts. But there's not very many live animal studies. And, you know, live animal studies, you'd really want to kind of confirm that because of these antifungal, antibacterial, antiviral activities, that they do promote growth. So that's kind of why they did this study. They wanted to assess the effectiveness. And what they did is they looked at a range of concentrations of this particular herbal oil blend and added it to the diet of poultry. So, of course, they had the control where they just had the diet and no herbal oil mix. Then they had the diet and 100 grams per ton, then 200 grams per ton, 300 grams per ton, 400, 500. And so, you know, they're taking a look and seeing what concentration will do the trick. You know, and if you get up to a certain concentration, then do we see toxicity in the blood? So that's why you see such a range in there. All right, so some of the other things that they did, taking a look, okay, some of the results. The live weights of the birds that were processed showed no differences between any of the treatments. So by giving them more herbal oil in the feed, it really didn't affect the live weights of the birds. Okay. What does that really tell you, Andy? If you gave the birds 100 grams per ton or 500 grams per ton, there was no difference in the overall live weights of the birds. What would that tell you?
Well, one's double. You're given double amount, right?
Yeah. So if why pay five times, put in five times the amount when there's really no need for it on that end?
Well, it's kind of like when you see studies about vitamins and minerals for humans, and they're like, you know, too much is always, you know, too much is not always better. Because, you know, I relate it to when we look at however many units of, say, vitamin C, this, that, or the other, and then you've got some studies that will say your body can only use this much. So why are you giving it 5,000, we'll just say, milligrams of vitamin C, when really your body can only absorb and use and utilize 2,500? You're just going to pee out the other 2,500.
Yeah.
And just go right down the toilet. So absolutely.
Yeah.
So I can see that. How, you know, why would I give them this if it's not giving them any more benefit? And you don't want to get near those toxic levels either.
No. So when you're looking at the live weight of the bird, there really was no difference between the treatments. The carcasses were heavier for the birds in treatment 4, 5, and 6, which had higher levels of the essential oil mix. And that's when you compare it with number one, which is the control. So if if you're looking to make the carcasses heavier, well, that's a bonus. You give them...
How much do they do studies that when you say carcass, but there still can be some fluid in there. So if do they find out if, okay, this that we gave, these essential oils, necessarily may not be more meat per weight, but there may be more fluid in the meat, which makes the carcass weigh more. Is that just am I reaching here, or is that a
possibility? You are reaching, but that might be a next step. This would be more of an initial study. But that's good thinking. That's the kind of thinking we encourage our graduate students to employ. You know, once you start work on one project, you usually come up with two or three other projects. You're like, what if we did this? Or why don't we check for this? And we encourage that kind of creative thinking because we want to create inquisitive scientists.
With me, that strictly comes from wanting to know how some of these commercial chicken producers that you see in the grocery store, how, because you always see those, you know, the 25% water added or brine or mixture or whatever. You know, you're like, okay, so how much of this am I paying for by the pound? This chicken and whatever y'all soaked it in or whatever. they use a term for that, whether it's so much water added or, you know. So it's that my comment was strictly based on, am I getting ripped at the store?
Well, no, you're right. You could do a comparison and take a look at this, you know, and see where it takes you. I mean, that's the sort of things that we would ask a student to kind of sit back and think about and fill out their thinking in that kind of experimental design. Okay, so let's keep going. So they looked at the heaviest breast weights. And they found that in treatment 4 and 5, which were 10.4% and 7.4% heavier than the control, which is interesting because 10.4% corresponded to the lower addition of essential oils. So it looked like for the breast weights, you know, they were increasing in size until you reached treatment 4, but then they got a little smaller in size after that. So a little bit of a bell curve there. So, you know, why breast weights? Why were they looking at that specifically? Well, because, well, that's a high-cut, high-value piece of meat. And that's why they were looking at that specifically. They looked at the actual intestines itself. They were looking at the cecal. And one of the things you look at in the cecal is its ability to absorb things. So the lining of the cecal, or the lining of the gut, looks like a little bit of a, think of a nubby terry cloth towel that has all those little projections sticking up. And that increases the surface area in which the digesta or the food can come in contact with this absorptive surface in the gut. And what they found was that the little nubs or the villi in the gut sticking up were higher for birds in treatment 2 compared to the control or treatment 3, 4, and 6. So if you have taller villi, that increases the surface area for your digesta to be absorbed and utilized by the bird. So that's kind of an interesting finding in this particular study. And you remember how I talked about the blood chemistry and how that tells you about toxicity?
Right.
When they looked at these particular birds, they looked at the blood profile, and everything was within the expected range. There was no signs of toxicity in the birds. So, yay! Kind of cool. Okay. So, overall, I mean, there's a lot of charts and everything that I obviously can't share with you over the telephone and radio. But, you know, what they concluded from this particular study was that the data told them that if you add at least 100 grams per ton of this Technoroma herbal mix in a diet that meets the needs of a broiler chicken, you could improve the body weight and the weight gains with a positive effect on the feed-to-gain ratio. And that improvement in growth performance was not dependent on dose. So you don't really see any additional benefits by going to concentrations greater than 300 grams per ton. So even though they went out to 500 grams per ton, you know, there just weren't really any added benefits to the bird. And then you have to consider, of course, so why pay for 500 grams per ton if somewhere between 100 and 300 would do the trick? So now that you know somewhere between 100 and 300 is
time
perhaps where
study.
A student could go, yeah, the student could go back and really fine-tune it and see if that magic number could be found. And so that's kind of what we would encourage a student to do. And of course,
now,
if
have
once
they ever
fine-tune
said,
it, they might
being,
do taste testing or something like that.
Now,
go
here's
ahead.
Me being the rebellious student saying, well, the cost of the study may completely just, it may not be worth the cost of a study. You know, if the cost between 100 and 300 of doing the study is this much, and the cost of the difference in that is only this much, then, you know, we're going to lose money by doing the study when we know it's somewhere between 100 and 300. So I get an A without having to do the study.
Well, it could be that Technorama was paying for that, or Technoroma was paying for it, and they might pay you to continue with the next study. So
next
who knows?
Study,
who knows?
Exactly.
Are you back up in Atlanta again?
We are. We're just kind of base camp for about 10 days. We're heading out a week from yesterday. So in six days, we'll be heading out on the book and speaking tour with Tractor
Supply.
Did you
get nailed with that weather that came through? And...
Oh, no. Okay, we've only been up here for, let's see, we've only been up here for 7 days. So, all of that stuff was going on week or two, 3 weeks before we came up.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
Oh,
but
I'm
still,
talking about
what
hit us this last weekend. Yet again.
I know it. I'm just hoping it's all over. I'm not too worried about going from here out to Dallas and stops along the way. But when we get up to, say, Kansas City and going down 70 towards St. Louis and into Indianapolis that first week of April, I'll be on pins and needles and hopefully Mother
Nature.
Hopefully
the weather, it's supposed to warm up. Please warm
up.
I'm so tired of the cold. In fact, it's so disconcerting that I can go outside now and go, oh, it's below freezing with the wind chill. And I'm like, I should not know this. I did not grow up knowing this. I should not be able to realize this.
Well, let me ask you this, scientist. Let me ask you this. How? And I grew up, my dad. It's funny, he's still a day, we'll be watching the newscast, and he gets so tickled at some of these weathermen, these meteorologists. But when they say, tomorrow we expect a high temperature of negative, say, 16. So he would always be like, now, either our heat measurement is messed up, or they're just blowing smoke. How can you measure a negative something? There has to be heat to measure. If it's negative 16, then how can it be less than negative heat? Then there still has to be heat there. There still has to be something that they can measure. If zero is absolutely no heat found at all,
they're measuring temperature, not measuring heat.
So, but there's less than no temperature. How do you measure that?
No,
there's nothing to measure.
You're confusing no temperature. You're confusing heat with temperature. Temperature can be negative according to the Fahrenheit scale. It's different if you're on the Celsius scale. It's different if you're on the Kelvin scale. So if you technically wanted to talk temperature, and that would allay your your father's comments, he should have been talking in Kelvin.
That'd make more sense.
Yeah. That seems to be kind of how the scale that he was thinking of.
I haven't
because
looked that up, yeah.
Kelvin, zero at Kelvin, that's called absolute zero. That's where the temperature at which all life stops. And so, he's kind of thinking that it should be Kelvin scale. But no, we're in the United States and we're on Fahrenheit.
Yeah, so, you're definitely, hopefully next winter won't be so bad for you guys or us or anywhere else.
Watch, it'll be like a million bajillion degrees for the summer. Yay.
I know, we're going to all, hey, look at the bright side. Maybe some of these cold temperatures put the ticks and bugs and insects in their place for the summer. So maybe this summer we can look forward to less mosquitoes, less ticks, less ants, less whatever. Since a lot of people had that brutal winter.
Man, I tell you, I'm so done with it.
I tell you what,
okay.
I will go to commercial break. I'll go to commercial break and we'll come
time?
Back. Sounds like
okay.
We can go ahead now. Yep, and since we're going to run till 1:15, it can be time. And
okay.
So we'll just get a few commercials out of there. When we come back, we'll cover a couple of more studies. And our guest today, folks, is poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. And we're talking all about really poultry studies kind of translated. So some recent studies she's come about, and she's letting us know kind of how they work and if they could benefit us. And since we do have a show on a regular basis about essential oils, that one is pretty neat. And just making sense of all of this stuff that may affect us in our backyard and our chickens. So no worries. All right, hey, we'll be back right after this short break from our sponsor. Stay with us, folks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. If you missed any part of today's show, no worries. Every single show is archived for your listening pleasure 24/7. So you gotta love that. And let's bring back on our guest today, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McCray. So
hi.
Tell us a little bit more. What else do we need to know?
Got another study here. This one comes from not Scotland, not Brazil, not Italy, but here in the USA.
Yay.
It comes from Michigan University, or Michigan State University. Looks like they kind of collaborated with somebody in Korea, so the Republic of Korea. So it's a poultry scientists, we don't work in a vacuum. We work together across all nations. So what they wanted to do is they're evaluating combined chemical and physical treatments on the reduction of different microorganisms on chicken skin, including Salmonella typhimurium. So they wanted to see if sodium hypochlorite, thiamine dichloryl sulfate, and ultrasound, which is the physical disruption, reduce the types of bacteria that you find on chicken skin. And the kinds of bacteria they were looking at was Salmonella, the one I just mentioned, mesophilic aerobic bacteria, which means middle temperature loving, air loving bacteria, and then coliforms. So general coliforms, which may include even in types of organisms like E. coli. There's a big grouping of them called coliforms. So what they did is they applied the chemical treatment and the physical treatments for 5 minutes, either doing them together or singly, and then they tested for the bacteria. What they had done is they inoculated the chicken skin or dosed the chicken skin with Salmonella in amounts that they had already measured. So they knew how much Salmonella was on the skin, and then they determined how effective their physical or chemical treatment was in reducing that number, as well as the coliforms and the mesophiles. So they did that, and they did several washings to see if they could get any of that bacteria off the skin. So there's three types of kind of, you can think about bacteria attachment to skin in three ways. There's those that are just hanging on real loose, and they're easy to wash off. And then you've got some that have a pretty good grip, and so they're there for a little bit longer before they get washed off. And then there's the suckers that are like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. And they tightly attach, and it takes several washings for them to come off. So, this is kind of an interesting study, and it's an interesting way to describe that to students and listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, you're washing your chicken, and they're sitting there going, nice try, sucker.
Yeah. And, chicken skin it's not a smooth surface. There's pores where the feathers were sticking in, and some of those bacteria that tightly attach, well, are they on the surface or are they in the pores? They're trying to hang on for dear life. I mean, that's their job, is to replicate in a suitable surface. And here you are trying to ruin their plans by washing them off. So after they did all this work, they cultured for bacteria and they looked at the levels and see if they changed. But they also looked at, we're using ultrasound and we're using these chemicals. Are we affecting the texture of the skin? So they looked, they tested the overall texture of the skin and the color of the skin after the treatments by using a color meter and a texture analyzer, so that they could see if, it may work really awesome to get rid of mesophiles, but if we're tearing the skin to bits, customer's not going to want that. Okay, so what they found out was that the antimicrobial activity of the sodium hypochlorite increased the ability of the sodium hypochlorite as an antimicrobial to reduce the amount of bacteria increased as you used a higher concentration of sodium hypochlorite, especially for loosely attached cells. So when you combined 200 milligrams per kilogram of sodium hypochlorite and ultrasound, you significantly reduced loosely, intermediately, and tightly attached bacteria populations. And you also did the same, for the mesophiles and for the coliforms and for the Salmonella. So, physically detaching these things by ultrasound vibration is great for getting rid of these bacteria. When you combined sodium hypochlorite and thiamindiloryl sulfate, or TDS, you didn't really sufficiently reduce any cells on the chicken skins except for loosely attached mesophiles and coliforms. So when you combined sodium hypochlorite and ultrasound, you got a higher reduction in the number of bacteria on the skin, and it did not negatively affect the skin color or the skin texture after they looked at those two variables. So, you know, what they found out was that, in general, the loosely attached bacteria were less resistant to the chemical and physical treatments than the intermediate and tightly attached bacteria, probably because those bacteria are down deeper layer into the skin layers and the crevices. And so they stated in their particular study that they wanted to do a second study, further research, to find out how the intermediately and tightly attached microorganisms can be effectively removed. So there you go. Kind of an interesting little story on that. You know, being a microbiologist, I have to throw in the micro stuff.
Absolutely. Well, you remember it was going around not too long ago, and every now and then you'll see something on Facebook or Twitter pop up about it. About there was a group, it was not the CDC, I asked them about it when I was there last week, about this group that did the study about, and then went public with, do not wash your chicken. And because a lot of people had the habit of, whether it was boneless, skinless, or a whole chicken or whatever, throwing it under the sink, turning the water on, washing it off before they put it in the pan, and go wash your hands. Wash your hands and look around the sink at all the splatter spots and what it's on. And that was their theory, was that maybe you've cut up a salad and it's sitting next to the sink. Maybe you've got some raw veg, whatever. And it doesn't matter, even later on. And then you put this whole raw chicken in the sink or parts of it, you're washing it off, and just look at the splatter drop all around the counter from doing that, and now you've got the possibility of salmonella and all the other bugs on your counter, and which may later be a problem. So they just came out with this, do not wash your chicken.
Now, when you went to the CDC, did you get your picture taken out in front of the front sign?
I got tons of pictures, not tons, probably about a half a dozen or eight. I got, not outside. In fact, they said that if I tried to take any pictures outside, that my camera would be confiscated. So, but I did get some inside. Imagine that. Okay, no pictures outside, but once you go inside, it's in. But let me tell you, it was awesome. I was there for 2 days, and it was really, 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 really cool. I did get my picture next to an iron lung.
Nice.
Back in the day when they did the polio treatment, I got it in their museum, where they have a whole section of the museum on foodborne diseases and things. I got a picture there next to the foodborne wall. I got a picture taken with a lot of awesome scientists and during our big webinar session in their broadcast room. So I did get some cool pictures, but none of anything.
None outside.
Even though
okay.
When we're walking on the campus, they're like, oh, by the way, that building right there is where all the bad germs are. That's where
don't
all the nasties are. You know, it's funny. Me and Jen were joking about it. It's like, you know, some people would have a picture of whatever on their wall, you know, a picture of a beach or scuba diving or a vacation or the Great Wall when they were there or something. But I kid you not, I went to one person's office, and there was a framed picture of the Ebola virus on the wall.
Sweet. That's cool.
There it was. And it's like, okay, you know, not a picture of your kids or the beach or
nope,
a picture
it's Ebola.
Of the Ebola.
Hey, everybody finds something cool.
Virus. I was like, great day. But, yeah, and that's a really, really neat place. There's security out the wazoo there, of course. And,
oh, yeah.
And I was told and shown a few different things, like there's a special button that if you push it, that they can take over every American television network immediately live. Just press that button, and then now we are live on every network in America. You know, things
go
like
Chicken
that.
Whisper,
really,
go.
I know, it's like, can I push it just for a second? Welcome to Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer. And then, like, they had in their major response room, where they do all the, you know, the, like, just like you'd see on TV when they have an outbreak and there was, you know, all the big screens and everything. No, there's like a switch, you know, you can, you're walking down the hallway, you can see in, hey, how you doing? But if they want you to see in, they flip the switch. This is like TV, like you, something you'd see on like 24 or something, and you flip the switch, and like the windows go frosted.
Yeah, cool.
Sorry, it sucks for you, you can't see in anymore. Just little neat stuff like that. Obviously, the no secret, they got two phones that go directly to the Oval Office. You know, just things like that. So it's that you would expect somebody at that level. You know, I think it's the only... Maybe it's the only uniformed government agency or something where their headquarters is not in D.C. It is in Atlanta. I grew up in Atlanta. I drove by the place like a bazillion times, you know, and it's changed, and they have a huge campus now. But it was a very awesome tour. The museum there is fabulous.
Sounds like you had a great experience.
We did. It was cool. Met a lot of neat people, and I look forward to going back. We'll maybe do another webinar this this summer. But it was cool, and I didn't share anything that was top secret, so I'm good.
That's good.
Yeah,
well, I have one
deal.
More article to discuss with your listeners. And this one is really kind of, it's outside of my area, and I'm going to do my best with it, but I found it really, really interesting, and I hope your listeners do too. It's called The Greenhouse Gas Emissions Footprint of Free-Range Eggs. And this was a study done in England. So... you know, as you realize, in England they have different laws and rules on how chickens can be raised than here in the United States. So the proportion of eggs that they produce in battery cage farms has decreased since 1996 from 88% to 49%. Barn production that use deep litter, that's at about 5%. Organic egg production has averaged about 2%. So the total production in the United Kingdom, egg production continues to increase, but there's a shift into free-range production. It was about 10% in 1996, and now it's about 45%. So, you know, when people start to talk about, you know, the greenhouse gas emissions from commercial livestock production, we know that it's lower in poultry than, say, red meat. But, you know, the profile of farmers is changing in the UK, and they're trying to give you a good idea of what that is today. So what they did is they calculated greenhouse gas emissions footprint for the fastest growing sector of their egg market, the free-range production in small commercial units on mixed farms. So that means they raise more than just chickens. They might have other livestock as well. And what they did is, I can't turn the page. Here we go. what they tried to do is they got three contrasting farm systems. The first one, a single enterprise that was free-range egg production. The second one, eggs is the primary enterprise on a dual enterprise farm. The third one is eggs was the secondary enterprise on a multiple enterprise farm. Then they tried to compare greenhouse gas emissions from eggs with emissions from a red meat production on those particular farms that I just talked about and on a comparable mixed farm producing red meat only. So, you know, they're trying to take into account different factors. And what they did is they had four farms, so the three that I described plus the comparable mixed farm that produced red meat only. And they got the farmers to give them detailed records on land management, livestock, all energy use, and all indirect inputs. And they did it for 12 months, so 1 year, between October 2008 and September 2009. They used all real farm records and published relevant greenhouse gas emission values, and they didn't assume or estimate anything for their inputs. So specific inputs were segregated throughout the calculations on these multiple species farms. If they had inputs that were, like, say, diesel, electric, non-commercial grazing, like horses, those inputs were allocated between the poultry and the ruminant side, the red meat side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ruminant side. In proportion to the revenue for each enterprise. So they did it based upon money. So if it was 50-50, they split it out 50-50 on what you were spending for gas, electricity, and non-commercial grazing stock. All three poultry units had free-range Rhode Island Reds. They were birds that were brought in as pullets at 1 month old and sold at 14 months old. And then each of those farms cleaned their housing and left them empty for 30 days before they started again with another flock. That was their management practices. After talking with the farmers, they assumed that the birds had 12 hours access per day based on a 14-month cycle. The soils were all mineral-based. And Farm 1 supplied egg boxes to the other two farms at zero cost because they kind of worked as a producer group, a cooperative maybe. The overall, over the whole production cycle, laying rates averaged 90%. Mortality rates were 3.6%. So that gives you an idea of how effective they were. Farm 1 had, remember, we're talking about England, so they had 28 hectares with 3,000 laying hens,
mm-hmm.
and they had 20 young sheep for 2 months where they just basically used those sheep for eating grass and keeping the grass levels down. On that farm, they used 132 tons of 70% wheat, 12% soy, and 4% sunflower plus minerals. And each bird, on average, was eating 13 grams per day. Farm 2, 39 hectares, 5,000 laying hens. This was the primary enterprise. The secondary enterprise was the 250 sheep and six calves. So that was their secondary enterprise, was sheep and cows. They had 267 tons of feed with an average consumption of 16 grams per bird per day. And Farm 3 was 79 hectares, and they were mainly a dairy farm with 6,000 laying hens, and they ate 11 grams per bird per day. So that's kind of where you were at. And what they found out by doing this particular study, their results were... here it is. Greenhouse gas emissions averaged a global warming potential of 2.2 kilograms of carbon dioxide per dozen eggs. Carbon dioxide emitted per dozen eggs, or 1.6 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per kilogram. And they did that assuming average egg weight of 60 grams. So 1 kilogram of protein from free-range eggs produces 0.2 kilograms of CO2 emitted, lower than the emissions from white or red meat based on the kilograms of meat and the kilograms of the protein. So, you know, we know that you're going to get less greenhouse gases from raising chickens, and really... looking at that, what they did is they looked at where the majority of that was coming from on the farm, and 63% represented embodied carbon in the poultry feed. Now, let me explain embodied carbon. Embodied carbon is the amount of CO2 produced during the creation of the feed, essentially. That's the broad term of it. So... you know, we say a lot of your business is going to go into housing and feed. Well, same goes for your greenhouse emissions. A lot of it's going to go into your feed. So, you know, when you think about it, eggs are a relatively low carbon supply of animal protein, but their production is dependent on a soy and grain diet, usually
uh-huh.
corn and soy here in the United States. And when you think about that, corn and soy are associated with high emissions from industrial nitrogen production, land use charge change, and transportation. We got to get it to the feed mills. So alternative sources of digestible protein might be available and produced from, like, say, waste processing, and could potentially be an effective tool for reducing that particular industry's greenhouse emissions and make us less, well, at least them in England, a little bit less dependent on imported raw materials. So they did a fantastic job. It's a really interesting study. Like I said, I'm doing my best to kind of explain things as I understand it, because it really isn't my area of expertise. But I just found it so interesting in how they were taking a look at things and really comparing it. And I thought your readers might find it interesting, too.
Yeah, it's like beef or chicken. And just one more add, one more thing to add to the pot when you go and make that decision. What am I doing better for the environment?
And less guilt for
mm-hmm.
raising chicken over, like, say, sheep or beef or larger red meat animals.
Was there anything in there that talked about, I know it said emissions and greenhouse gases and all that, but anything about runoff waste?
No, not on this particular one. I think that would probably be a separate study.
Yeah, that's always a big deal. You always hear about that, especially with chicken producers, just the runoff and where does all that go. I mean, you can hear that with backyard chickens in a small little town when someone wants to keep six. Oh, what about runoff waste? So from six chickens. They're not concerned about 4 million dogs in a square mile area. but six chickens, oh, Lord, we need to have all kinds of studies right immediately. So just one of those things to deal with being the chicken whisperer. So. Awesome stuff, Dr. McCray. I appreciate that. You do. It's like, you know, you've got, you know, this town where there's probably, you know, 300,000 dogs, and, you know, you want to have, you know, 20 people want to have six chickens, and they're all of a sudden they have to have runoff studies.
You know, if the average homeowner had to deal with the paperwork that a farmer has to go through to keep track of inputs and runoff, and verify that they're doing what they're doing, the average homeowner wouldn't want to own a home.
Yeah, I'm a rent, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll rent, thanks. And,
so,
thanks for that.
You know, the level of appreciation for keeping track of those sorts of things just isn't there. So,
now,
I,
folks, if
you know,
if
they,
drink,
had to,
yes,
if they had to verify that their dogs...
Oh, geez, yeah, really.
Waste was not in any way influencing what flows into the gutters or what the fertilizers they're adding to their lawns. Yeah, they couldn't. They wouldn't want
to. Yeah.
Them.
And I don't
well,
know.
Well, thank
I
you,
don't.
Andy. I appreciate you allowing me to share this information with your listeners.
Well, thank you for coming on. Now, folks, you know that Dr. McCray has been coming on the show now for probably 3 years. She is a member of the Poultry Dream Team for Chicken Whisperer magazine, and she doesn't just have one article in the spring 2014 issue, but she has two. She has one about chicken coops and kind of some, you know, me and Jen were reading it again for the sixth time over the weekend, and we were like, you know, this is... some stuff in here that I bet a lot of people just don't think about when purchasing a coop. And so really good information about choosing the right coop for your backyard and some things that you probably hadn't thought about when choosing the right coop. And she also has a very interesting study piece in the magazine about comparing, I believe it was Americanas and Delawares.
Yeah.
And what the outcome was as far as cost per egg on I think that they were pasture-raised,
pasture,
I believe.
Yeah.
And so, and very, very, I think the numbers in that study are going to blow some people away. I'm not even going to get into them because I don't want to spoil it, but I think when they read that, and when they
read
get down to the cost per, when they get down to the the cost per egg, they're going to think, lordy, lordy. So,
yeah, I don't know how the Amish do it around here. The Amish around here charge $2 a dozen, and I'm just kind of going, how? You're not making a profit. I know you're not making a profit. What's going on?
It's amazing. I know it. And, So anyway, so that you've got that to look forward to, folks, two articles from Dr. Murray coming up in the issue. So, Bridget, thank you very much for joining us today. We will see
you back here
in a couple of weeks, and that I will keep in contact with you off air because we will be on the road. I don't know if during showtime we'll be traveling or if we can pull over and have the show or if we'll be stationary during the show or what have you or where we'll be in 2 weeks, but I will let you know when, where, and all that information. So thank you very much for coming on today, and we look forward to seeing you back in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. How awesome is that? I love this episode. All these studies to kind of, make you go, You know, you've heard that. Things that make you go, And she's got one coming up in her magazine, too, so that's going to be really cool. And when you're done reading that article, you'll probably go, But we know, and it's a fight we fight when people say, well, why don't you just buy eggs at the grocery store? Or why don't you just buy eggs from a farmer down the street? Why do you, they get so caught up in eggs. But we know there's so many more benefits to backyard chickens other than eggs, insect control, education, fertilizer, composting. It's just amazing. So many people who don't get it, just so focused on eggs. You can go buy eggs down here at the farm. So but this study will make you go, hey, thank you very much for tuning in today. We do appreciate it. And I believe we will have a show coming up on... I have to think, at least I hope, this coming Monday and Tuesday before we hit the road on Wednesday. So this Monday would be Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, so make sure you mark your calendars for that. I'll keep you posted over on Facebook and Twitter, as well as we've got a gazillion contests going on. We've got another March Coop contest with Wooden Wonders. That's wooden-wonders.com. And thank you very much for them for providing this awesome Hobbit whole chicken coop. So go check them out online. Look at all the varieties of coops, and they have other things other than coops. Same design, playhouse for the kids, storage, all kinds of cool stuff. You might want to have it as a root cellar. Very cool. www.wooden-wonders.com. Very cool. We appreciate them for providing this awesome chicken coop. The whole package just from wooden-wonders.com. You got the coop. We have a removable and cleanable coop floor. We have shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states. We're looking at over $2,000 just for that, and we're adding prizes weekly to that grand prize package. It's awesome. We also have a password collection contest going on our Facebook page. We also have contests within contests. Just amazing. So follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. Follow us on Twitter. Just go to Twitter and look for the Backyard Poultry. And, of course, right here on Blog Talk Radio, you can listen to the whole version of the show, if you missed any of it, on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and BlogTalkRadio.com. So, again, I want to thank you all for tuning in today. We appreciate it, and we'll see you back here Monday with Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown right here, radio. That's Monday at noon. Have a great weekend, everybody. God bless. Ha ha ha.